Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for.
Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to yet again another episode of the Beautiful Game podcast. As ever, I'm your host, Budge, joined by my faithful co-conspirators, Dot and Dej. Gents, it's been a while since we've been in the studio. Feeling good, back on top form. How are we doing today?
Very well, thanks, Budge.
100%. How about you, Dej? How are you feeling?
Very, very happy. It's a sunny day outside.
This is it.
We've got a great guest. So, you know, it keeps getting better and better. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to this one.
100%. This is one that we've been planning and has been in the works for a little while. And we're very, very happy to finally get it over the line. And as I said, of course, we're back in the studio as well. So it feels right. As you said, Dej, just a lovely day. We are joined by a very well-esteemed guest. Now, of course, we know the UK are very well known for their German exports, from cars to beer and all the rest of it. I might be biased, of course, being an Arsenal fan, but for me, this gentleman, this special guest, is certainly up there amongst the best German imports of the UK.
He is a
World Cup winner. You know, I think it's the first time we've had the opportunity to interview a World Cup winner. And is also part of a very elite group of men who have been able to amass 100 plus apps for Germany. I think there's only 12 people that have done that, and he's in and amongst it. Of course, he's won the treble in terms of FA Cups for Arsenal, and is currently the manager of the academy. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome Per Mertesacker to the platform. Welcome, Per.
Thanks very much, man. I got red, you know, during this intro. It was lovely, honestly.
I wanted to use the shirt here, man. I wanted to use another phrase on the pod, Per, but because we're family friendly, instead of saying the BFG, I'm going to say the big friendly German. But thank you for coming on the platform. We really appreciate you taking out the time to speak with us.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward, man. I'm ready.
100%. Right, Dej, let's get things going and kick us off.
Yeah, so usually we like to speak to guests about their journey in the game, but I think let's maybe talk about what you're doing now as manager of the Arsenal Academy. What is your role in terms of day-to-day? Because sometimes titles can be loaded and they've got a generic, you know, meaning. But if you could just explain to us what you do, we would appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah, I've been doing my new job for 3 years now. You know, I've stopped my playing career 3 years ago and been the academy manager for 3 years. I started the job because people had faith in me, basically. Did I know what was in front of me? Probably not. You know, I've never done this job before. Never had to do any interviews before to getting into that job, but what I do know after learning a lot from a lot of staff and players actually is setting out the vision for the academy and influencing around 70 plus staff and 150 players, you know, in the academy within 10 teams. So, and within my job, obviously, I have to manage staff to get the best out of youngsters and myself. I want to be a role model and around players, staff, parents, all the stakeholders to make sure, you know, we build up the next generation of people and players that are equipped for life, basically. So, that is the beauty of an explanation, but obviously day to day, I'm going to start pretty early here at Colney at our training base where the first team is within our 23s and 18s group. And then there's another section, you know, well known as the Hayland boys, you know, who start their journey at under nine players until under 16, where I then most of the times go in the evenings and check the scenes, whether we can keep up the qualities that we promise to deliver, basically.
You know what? You mentioned the Hellen boys. So how proud does it make you feel when you see the next one coming through? Mm. For example, we've seen Flo Belogan, you know, on a long-term deal and, you know, he's being promoted to the first team. So how proud are you when you see one of the youngsters get into the first team?
I think, first of all, you know, we're trying that they really feel proud of themselves, you know. Arthur Concour just been promoted, Flo Belogan, and then the likes of Emil and Bukayo, who have been massive for the first team, and projects, you know, like we had with Joe Willock. I think he was on a podcast here as well.
And then
the likes of even Ainsley Maitland-Niles, who have been, and Reese Nelson, who have been part of the academy since pre-academy, since 7-8 years old, and then started their journey at under nine. Is extremely proud to have such good role models, you know, for our youngsters, that they are a true inspiration, you know, for the game of football, for so many people, for our graduates, but for our people as well here in the academy. I mean, but these are not the only one, you know. I always, you know, gather the fact that, you know, we have so much more success stories, you know, and I don't want to narrow it just down to these 6-7 individuals, because they are the 1-2% actually who started their journey at under nine level. So we want to make sure and have the responsibility for all of them, you know, to give them a really great positive experience that they can learn alongside football, all the important life skills, you know, to be successful, because the journey gets tougher and tougher throughout the age groups. And to narrow it down to have a Bukayo Saka is a really proud moment. And we love him because he wants to give back to the next generation. But there are others who reach the professional football game as well or do well in other businesses. And that's what we are proud of as well.
100%. Now, of course, Pert, you know, bringing through young players to the first team is something that has been ingrained in the Arsenal fabric for years and years and years. You know, you go back over decades and you can see that has been a consistent theme. I wonder if... and maybe you could shed some light into it. Is there, you know, when you look at, you know, the strategy of the club, is there like a quota or a percentage that is a target for number of players that graduate from the academy into the first team? I know, for example, the Premier League, say, might have a quota of homegrown players that need to be in the first team. But as a club, is there like a target that you guys have that you want to see graduate to the first team every few years or every year, so on and so forth?
Yeah, I think there's a quota, which is important for us to have certain targets, right? If the quota is, for example, one player, you know, every second year, you know, migrates into the first team, that is something, you know, that is of high standards, you know. But, you know, with numbers, it's always pretty difficult, you know, to narrow that down. So our ultimate goal is, you know, to make them really equipped, you know, for whatever happens, because they could, the business case within the academy is obviously, you know, multi-million pound player. That's the reality, you know, of a Bukayo Saka that we're achieving, but as well creating value in the footballing market for other players, you know, who go on different journeys. You know, we have seen it just recently last summer, Mark McGuinness, Zach Medley, these likes of players who go to different journeys and hopefully do well and generate money for ourselves. You know, that is the business case for the academy. Obviously, we're not speak too much about it because we want to take our responsibility really serious, you know, and make sure that we create better people. By doing that, actually, you know, we will all enhance the business side of things. So yeah, there is a quota that is in the drawer. We get it out sometimes, but it's not something we look at. And if we look at something, we look sometimes 3-year average, you know, on appearances, on minutes within the first team, if we can keep continue thriving for these kind of numbers, these types. So it needs to be realistic as well, you know, so we're not getting just judged on a season. It is more like looking 3 to 5 years, you know, what money has been generated from the academy, what minutes have been generated in the Premier League, actually, because that's ultimately where our focus lies, that we get less, let's say, less points for the FA Cup, the Carabao Cup. Also, there is, if a youngster is longer within the first team, obviously, you know, the percentage we get accounted for get less and less and less because the development continues, you know, for the likes of, I go back to Alex Iwobi even, you know, he generated a huge amount of money, you know, for the first team. And if you look back, he has been years in the academy, then had a good spell of development in the first team as well. Where do you account that money for, you know, that? So there are, we're trying to be as consistent as possible, but it's not always like, okay, easy to narrow down to, let's say, we're going to produce one player from Haaland, you know, every second year into the first team.
Yeah, you've spoken a lot. You've mentioned it a few times so far during this podcast, players and people.
Yeah.
How important is it that you develop people? Because I remember seeing maybe like an article towards the back end of your career when you were talking about the magnificent pressure that you face playing football. So is there modules that get introduced into the academy program where dealing with being under the spotlight? So like, for instance, Flo Belogan, he's recently broken into the first team, played against Brentford, whole spotlight is on him. Would he be equipped with the necessary tools in case of, you know, the social media spotlight, being spotted out and about, people taking pictures, people invading his private life?
Yeah, I was never exposed to that. So I'm very, very lucky. You know, when I started my career, you know, I had a bunch of journalists, you know, getting around me, you know, and I was just thrown into the deep end that side. I could fairly well cope with it, you know, when I was 18, 19. But nowadays, when you are 13, 14, you know, you get into the world of social media, you know, you kind of do keepy uppies 20 times and you are the next superstar, you know. that creates expectations, you know, that needs dealing with, you know. So, and obviously we have a team of coaches or a team of player care where we consider, you know, what kind of education do we need to give to players, to parents, to help them with expectations. But that starts with to try to get rid of that burden of, you know, making it as a footballer, because every under 9 player thinks, and the parent think, they're going to be the 1% that make it. I can tell them as much as I want, you know, these are the stats, you know, which I bring always up fairly consistent, that there's a chance that, you know, 4 out of 5 academy players are out of the game by 21, by the year of 21. You know, so is that kind of bringing that narrative, you know, to the equation, that the burden gets less heavy in terms of getting released from the game of football. And alongside that journey, we're trying to educate and do workshops on anything, financial issues, agents, the pressure that comes within. We have psychologists working for us who then, you know, deal with similar situations where performing under pressure is a huge deal, you know, for every single player that comes through it. And everyone deals with it in a different way. But we need to make sure that they express, or they have the right tools for themselves, you know, whatever happens, that there's a situation that they can deal with. But obviously our main focus is to help everyone to find themselves, really, you know. Everyone wants to do it, and everyone sees the beautiful picture of being a professional player. And social media helps with that picture. That is, everything is beautiful. I know, obviously, I know what it can give me, but what it takes away as well at times. So Flo Balogun, obviously, he's been part of the system for such a long time, has played magnificent, scored so many goals in 18s, 23s level, checker trade games. However, the next level, you know, to be elite, you know, in the first team dressing room and to challenge for a spot is another one he needs to deal with. So, you know, by saying, yeah, have we prepared him for that? Yeah, we tried. But actually, the situation that he will face now getting 10, 15 minutes, you know, in the first team and trying to make an impression. You know, that pressure, that is totally different than what he has felt before. So we're trying to make a good job. However, going through these new narratives now within the first team, hopefully we have helped him to develop, you know, some skills that he can use now in totally different and new situations.
Do you almost see this as a natural progression in your own career? Because when I used to watch you play for Arsenal, you were a dominant centre-back, leader at the back. When you were in that back line, I always felt that Arsenal were secure defensively because, you know, you had leadership skills, you had great qualities in commanding the defence. And do you almost think that this is being the natural progression for you, that you may go into management and then potentially becoming an actual club manager later down the line? Is that something you've always been into?
Yeah, I thought coming to the Premier League was a huge challenge for me, you know, where, especially my first year, I made a lot of mistakes, man. I was falling down, I was stumbling. I was losing a lot of duels and, you know, and then, you know, what did I do? And I was German international, I had 70 caps already. So I was in the 26, 27.
Why do you think that was, though? What's different about the English game?
It's just the speed and the physicality is just different. You know, where you thought in Germany, I would get around and just move my body bits and pieces, you know, in England, you know, I remember it wasn't good enough, you know, so I had to, you know, get my game up to speed quite quickly. I mean, the beautiful thing about Arsene Wenger was he was constantly encouraging me. You are intelligent enough. You will learn from it. You know, when we just conceded because of me. But these pressure moments, you got to sustain and you have to good mentors and leaders around you, you know, who you learn from, basically. Mm-hmm. So and then, you know, 7 years later from the entry point, Arsene Wenger and Ivan Gazidis at that time, you know, drove that to and asked me if I want to stay at the club. That was the first intention. I think what helped that that the year before, Mikel Arteta actually left to Man City, and I think they didn't want to lose another player who could make a difference in their mind. And I think Mikel said actually to them that, you know, if you don't want to lose a good person again, you know, just offer this guy something. So actually Arsene drove it, asked me if I want to stay at the club. Obviously, I asked my wife, who's obviously...
She's the boss.
So the government then agreed, yeah, we want to stay in England, actually. We are settled after 7 years. And then they offered me the job, actually. It's a bit overwhelming, actually, you know, I have to say. There are a lot of experienced academy managers that I've met throughout my time now. And I just went, my motivation was basically that, yeah, I've seen academy players going into the first team dressing room. And I thought to myself, yeah, I could probably make a difference here to prepare them a little bit better, you know, to what is required to achieve the highest level and not to think that you've achieved everything when you are in the first team dressing room. Is how do you challenge then the status quo? How do you ask questions and challenge people who have been successful for 10, 12, 15 years? I haven't seen that. And I thought, let's make sure when I do this, I have this constantly in my mind. What I've seen is good, you know, not a knock. We at Arsenal Academy has always been great in producing players, but I said to myself, yeah, I want to make a difference. I want to take this serious. And I thought Arsene knew what he would get, you know, from me in terms of commitment, you know, for a job that I don't know, but I was willing to learn from day one.
So what type of character were you in the dressing room? Because you've mentioned Mikel Arteta, who's now obviously a manager yourself, who Dot said, or as he said correctly, that you were very, you had a personality on the pitch. You were a leader. So what sort of attributes do you think Arsene Wenger saw in you, apart from those, to make you stand out to be the head of academy?
Yeah, I think resilience, first and foremost. I think he has seen me, you know, struggle, you know, be successful, but struggle at times as well, where I was able to learn from my mistakes and adapt, basically. I think he saw me as an adaptable person that could cope quite well with that scenario, with that challenge. And he probably... thought as well that I have the reputation. You mentioned, you know, being a world champion helps sometimes, you know. And I thought to myself, okay, that's fine with me, you know, but that only, that reputation, you know, keeps you in a job for 2 years, you know. So I thought, yeah, that keeps you in a job for some time, but you need to back it up with content, you know, with presence. And I thought, I think he saw someone who has got the presence as well, you know, not only in because of my overview and my being tall and being a communicator. I thought he thought I could lead a dressing room, but as well, I could lead staff. I could lead, you know, a group of people who would then motivate it and get the best out of themselves, you know, to influence kind of the next generation of players. I think that's what he thought. And I think my 7 years helped him massively. And I have to remind myself, you know, I had a heavy injury in my first year in February, where I almost didn't get back from. And I worked quite hard to come back from that. And initially had a couple of good seasons where, you rightly said, we had a back-to-back FA Cup win, where I then extended my contract, and that probably led to the fact that I got offered the job and still have it to this date, and kind of survived as well the changes that was made subsequently after. But my responsibility is to live on the legacy that Arsene left within the club, that, you know, I try to fulfill them every single day, and it keeps kind of reminding me these moments of, you know, how much of a leader he was in circumstances where I struggled, you know, where I tried to get off, you know, offside a bit, you know. I remember, you know, when just before the FA Cup final in 2017, you know, I didn't play any part in the season, basically. I was injured the whole year. And 5 weeks before the end of the season, I said to Arsene, listen, set me on holiday. I'm not in the squad. I'm just training here. I don't see my value. I mean, in that moment, he was pretty clear to me what my job was and how much the squad needs me, you know, and what is expected from me. So I was pretty much put in a place, back into the place, because I had a wobble. 5 weeks later, circumstances helped me to get on the pitch in the final. And
that was a performance and a half, by the way.
And just these remind me of the leaders and the people, the mentors I had next to me in struggling, in challenging moments. And I'm so grateful for that. So, and I recognize that a lot of kids, a lot of youngsters, they need positive role models who in the right moments, when I'm struggling, when there's a wobble, just standing by your side and just put you back in place. I will ever be grateful. And these moments will always remind me on my journey to be a better leader every single day.
100%. Like I said, that was an immense performance from you in that final as well.
I just brought up myself, right? So you didn't want to...
Do you know what, Pat? I want to ask you this question. It just came to mind now. Do you still get the bug? So, you know, like, for example, your defensive partner in Laurent Koscielny is still playing now, you know, in Bordeaux. And we're also big boxing fans on the platform, right? And we've seen recently, you know, boxers come out of retirement and start fighting again. Mike Tyson, Roy Jones, so on and so forth. So, and you're still a young chap. So,
yeah.
You ever same age as Ronaldo.
Exactly. Do you ever get that kind of bug where you feel like, oh, I want to get back on the pitch and I want to contribute still? Or is that like well and truly gone now when you're completely focused on, you know, your job at hand? Does it still, you still get the urge?
Oh, I don't get it anymore. I don't know. I had my 15 years. I had 15 years in the professional game. When I retired, I was 33, played 10 years as well from 20 to 30 in the national team. You know, that was a tough time as well, where achieved a lot, but it was always long summers and we always reached semifinals and finals, you know, through that time. So it was kind of, I thought I had my time. Mm. And when I stopped, I had a serious knee injury. And when I look at my kids now, I wanted to be in a position where I still could play with them and not, you know, not having to be hesitant. But still, to these days, I sometimes train with some of the groups, you know, under 18.
Yeah.
I stay for now with the under 16, 15, you know, it goes lower and lower every single year. But yeah, no, I'm totally fine. And the transition for every professional player is the key here, you know. Mm-hmm. There will be a transition at some stage, and I was able to manage to get a job within football, so I'm very blessed. So that, you know, these perspective reminders help me really to cope with, yeah, Ronaldo's Ronaldo. You know, he's on his journey. I'm on my journey. I'm pretty grateful the impact I can have now on the next generation. I'm passionate about that, and that gives me more than just feeling, oh yeah, I could be part of that dressing room and I would still have some banter, you know. I would still have some Drake tunes, you know, with some. So yeah, and sometimes be really serious, you know, and sometimes, you know, I always try to give a range of emotions, a range of characteristics that try to get on with people. However, once it goes to the pitch, you know, I was that serious about, you know, what we want to achieve as a team. And I would compromise very, very little. But in terms of getting on with me, I hope a lot of players, you know, would say that, yeah, serious German, but, you know, very efficient and getting on with people and trying to mix it up sometimes as well.
No, that's perfect. And I've got close friends that have worked at Arsenal, and that's testament to what you're saying. They couldn't speak highly of you enough. But in terms of youth team football, right now we'll grade Arsenal A+. But if we're to talk about the first team, like, what do you make of what we're seeing right now in terms of Arsenal's transfer window and the product that we're getting on the pitch?
Yeah, massive transition going on. That's what I would class it as. And I think it was clear when Arsene left, the void that needed to be filled wouldn't get sorted in a couple of seasons, 3-4 years. You always want the shortcut, you know, bang, straight back into Champions League, straight back into being successful. I think, you know, even myself, you know, realizing working now within the academy, going more long-term, developmental, I think we've seen kind of similar-ish traits, you know, in the first team, you know, and I hope that Mikel gets the time that he needs, and probably a lot of people, are impatient. I want to be successful tomorrow. I want to go back in the Champions League tomorrow. I want to speak to people and say, listen, we have got the best club in the world who challenges for the titles, you know, every single year. That's not the reality, you know. I think that the earlier we get on, you know, on the train of, you know, we're in a big, big transition still, you know, and to have sustainable success, I think there need to be some trust. You know, I'm all for trusting people. If Mikel Arteta, and I perceive him to be the right person, let's give him the trust and now the development squad that he can take to the next level that will achieve Champions League football maybe in 2-3 years. That's from a club person. That's my take basically at the moment, because I've worked with Mika very, very closely. You know, I stood by his side when he would address the squad as captain, you know, and I was kind of his right-hand second-hand man, basically, you know, learning, growing under his leadership, you know, and I know how much he wants it. I know his work ethic. I know, you know, how intense the squad works at the moment, you know, to get to a better level. I think we have all to swallow disappointment at the moment, which I'm keen to change. But, you know, the environments that we're going to deliver in the next years, you know, will be key for our success. So I'm pretty much keen on the work that we have been doing together for years within the first team. Then he went off, comes back. We're trying to do the same again, you know, to have a successful spell for Arsenal Football Club. But the stakes are very, very high. And I understand that there is a lot of criticism. But some people need to absolutely swallow that and try to grow with it. And Mikel is someone who does that.
So what qualities does he bring to the table? Because when I speak to people within the game, everyone's saying, you know, this guy, he's going to bring Arsenal back to where they belong. Yeah. He knows the philosophy. He's got the right ideologies. He does everything right on the training ground. But when I speak to, let's say, Arsenal fans, the average Arsenal fan, they're saying, listen, this is not good enough. Like, something needs to give. So what qualities does he bring to the table?
Yeah, I think what I mentioned there is obviously his passion for Arsenal Football Club. I think from the very first beginning when he joined, you know, from Everton, you know, it was that feeling of him, you know, with Everton going to Arsenal Football Club, they knew it's going to be tough, you know. We're probably going to lose. That was the mindset of someone outside coming into Arsenal. From that moment, I knew, yeah, and he wants to be part of that, you know, being absolutely dominant in what we do and playing football and how we treat each other, what we stand for. So he's crucially big on that everything needs to be worked on. There needs to be an intensity around the group, on the pitch, off the pitch, you know, kind of to develop that environment that is needed to be successful. So that is his key element. And then he was part of the Pep Guardiola era where he probably learned so much, you know, about how he wants to progress as a coach. I haven't been part of a team that he has coached, right? So I cannot comment on that. But what I hear from people, from players that feedback to me, that they're on board, you know, on board what he wants to achieve, how he wants to play, and how he wants to bring us back to where we belong. And where we belong is at least top four. And top four means always challenging for titles. That's the vision for the club. So, and obviously, you know, I understand, has he delivered on that front? No, absolutely not, you know? And we're sitting in one boat. I'm trying to provide him with the best support I can to help him on that path, you know? With
so
the best
so you mean by like providing players or also like pastoral advice, like this is how we can improve or?
Yeah, anything really. I'm here to support where I can to be a really a sounding board, you know, in terms of his skills and his leadership, you know, because I've seen him grow, you know, in that element. You know, when he came to Arsenal as a player, he was regarded immediately as one of the leaders. Yeah, we had Thomas Vermaelen, Robin van Persie, but when they left, you know, it was Mikel. Even he was just in the building for a year. Bang. That was the mindset. He was regarded as someone to take responsibility, to take a squad into the next level. That hasn't changed for me. But what I urge everyone, you know, to kind of consider is, and I think Edu came out and mentioned it in a similar way, that we want to build a foundation with him and building foundations, you know. And I had time here in the academy. I was given years, you know, build a foundation of staff and players that will kind of affect the next kind of generation. So in academy terms, 5 to 10 years, that's the cycle I'm talking about, you know. I thought it was 1 or 2 years. No, the cycle in youth football is 5 to 10 years. But for him, he wanted to turn it around immediately. I think we're now at the stage where we accept that we are in a transition and he wants to do it well. Believe me, he wants to do it well and wants to deliver. And that's in that intensity I see in positive moments, when we win, but at the moment when we're losing as well. Yeah, not too, he knuckles down and is really someone who embraces that criticism. So yeah, I understand the critical views that at the moment it's not good enough, but he's someone who really thrives in that environment. And I'm here to support whatever he needs in terms of my advice on players, my advice on training, my advice on leadership. He knows where I am, and that's always how we grew alongside each other.
Mm. Per, you mentioned Edu in your response just then, and I think that's interesting because, you know, we was just speaking about Mikel Arteta.
Yeah.
But also Edu has been, you know, someone that has come under some criticism from Arsenal fans, particularly with the approach to transfer window just recently.
Yeah.
You obviously didn't get a chance to play with Edu like you did with Mikel to understand and see the kind of qualities that he brings. Mm. But I'm interested to know how closely you work with Edu in your role currently and what qualities does he bring and experiences does he bring to his role as a technical director of the club?
Yeah, super close. I was super happy when Edu came because really from the start, it felt like that we have, you know, play together, actually, you know, or work together. So from the very first beginning, he gave me the ultimate trust that, yeah, he's a technical director deals with it, with club issues, first team issues, but on the academy side, I'm really, you know, on level with him. You know, I was really impressed by his openness to my role and how he sees me in the context of the club. I was well impressed, you know, how experienced he was working for a club and the association over years. So he shared a lot of knowledge, actually, how to evolve it and how to work closer together, that we can both benefit from our expertise, because there's always an eagerness, you know. The closer you work together on both sides, academy, first team, club, the better you create a kind of an energetic environment. From the first beginning, I felt that with him, and I felt the trust that he had in myself to, yeah, I myself as a leader needed to lead a change of people within the academy, of players. He totally got on with it and trusted me and backed me in every single decision I made, you know, in the academy. So I have to say his calmness and readiness to just support me was second to none. So I can only say that we work pretty close. We meet every week and give ourselves updates and information. He's eager to be seen, to be present, especially at Colney, and just supports me on my right. And as I said, I have never felt stronger about the positions we have at the moment, you know. But as well, I recognize that there is huge pressure. But do I support Edu in those moments? Absolutely, 100%. Mm-hmm. Does he need to sometimes then speak to me and just let it all out? That's my job as well, you know, because he feels like he can 100% trust me and gets it out, because everyone needs to release that, that form of pressure. You know, we always perceive, you know, leaders to be like, oh yeah, they need to take it, they earn a lot of money. That's not how it works, man. So when we suffer together, but the support is unconditional here from my side.
Yeah, when I saw Edu, he came out with confidence. I like the way he strategically planned what Arsenal are doing. He was saying that, okay, if Thomas Partey and Granit are out, we want Lokonga to come in. We need time. But we live in a microwave generation, and the teams at the top, Liverpool, Manchester City, Chelsea, even now you can say Leicester are coming into the fold, seem to be, you know, a few years ahead of Arsenal. And when I look at Arsenal over the last 10 years, they were sort of like the model club in Europe. If you say, how do you want your football club to be run? Each owner will say, like Arsenal. That seems to have sort of been lost now, because during the summer, some Arsenal fans have said, we lack a bit of direction. Willian has come in for a year, you know, said he doesn't feel comfortable, wants to leave. Granit Xhaka, he was on the verge of being sold to Roma, signs a new contract. Siad Kolasinac, he's out in the cold, comes in to play against Manchester City. So it seems a bit of a mishmash of, I don't know, maybe decision-making. So how would you sort of explain this to Arsenal fans that are sort of, they're not buying into the long-term vision?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you could almost sense when you're not successful, then where's the vision of the club, you know? And if you can see Leicester, big training ground, Tottenham, big training ground, new stadium, all the things Arsenal did like 10, 15, 20 years ago, you know, they are almost like matched by other clubs. And all of a sudden, you're in a position where you're, 20-year leader just leaving, you know. So that was, you know, you have to admit that that was probably one of the biggest challenges when COVID hit at the same time, you know, in that transition period. You know, I'm not going to blame a disease, you know, because that's not what I'm here for. I want to lead the change, you know, lead the transition and stand firm in everything we do. And yeah, what happened, you see the owners more engaged than ever. They wanna provide more to the public, more to the fans, be more seen. That's something I think that's gonna be welcomed, you know, not only by fans, but by staff and myself. I have to say I've always been in close contact. They trusted me in a way as well, you know, to do my job. So I think, yeah, you can question a lot of decisions. However, I would say that now is time to get on board and trust that process that we're trying to put in place. And I feel that there's a real trust, you know, in the likes of Mikel. in the likes of Edu, in the likes of Mikel, and myself, which is really, really important, I think, for the next stage. If you ever change again year after year, I don't know if that's going to work for us, because we want to come back to a class act of Arsenal Football Club. And I know every class act will be questioned when there is no success. So at the moment,
he's had success as well with the FA Cup, to be fair.
Yeah. True. And we tend to forget those, you know. I mean, we won 3 FA Cups in 4 years, you know, in my time, 14, 15, 17, you know. That's not achieved like this, you know. But obviously fans want to see, you know, the Premiership, they want to see the Champions League, they go just back on what was said at that time. And I think now is there's some clarity now provided on how the next 2 to 3 years will look like, you know, realistically. And I think that's important as well, because on the back of what was said by the likes of previous leaders was, yeah, challenging with Bayern Munich, challenging, you know, to win Champions League. We are so far away from that, you know, realistically, and still the expectations is that. Yeah, I understand that. However, someone needs to change that, you know, someone needs to change that and trying to make an effort, really, you know, going into the next period where you see other clubs overtaking us, but we are here to make the effort, put the energy in, and really provide the excellence for our generations and for our squad that is now here. So that's why it's a bold effort, actually. That's what I believe it is.
I think just to add a flip side to what Dez said, he said it seems like there's been a mismatch. But from my point of view, I think there's been a clear strategy this summer. Ben White, under 23, Aaron Ramsdale, who I watched at Sheffield United, good goalkeeper, under 23, Bukayo Saka, under 23, Emil Smith-Rowe, Flo Balogun, Eddie Nketiah. So, yes, of course, we know that you're trying to build a project for the future, but do you feel that the current crop of players are good enough to take Arsenal into the Champions League now?
Probably not. And my prime focus is on Norwich, basically, on the next couple of games. that is what I've learned throughout my years. Yeah. Now I'm looking more long term. Edu needs to look more long term sometimes, you know, where he sees we need to build a foundation for the next 3 to 4 years. I think he especially thinks in 3 year cycles. Me in academy, I live in 10 year cycles now, right? So obviously, and Mikel needs to address the here and now. The next games are the most important for us as a football club. That's how I feel, you know, and that's what I want to get behind the squad, because they basically need us, you know, to create that positivity and energy around the whole training ground. That's what our job is as well, you know, as employees and as, you know, lifelong Arsenal fans, is, you know, to keep the energy flowing and really build that around the staff here as well in the academy, because there are anxieties, you know, around stuff sometimes as well. You know, what happens if we go down? You know, do I have my job next year? What happens if we're not going to reach European football? Has that an effect on employment, on staff, on numbers in the academy? So we're trying to make sure that we keep the positivity within the environment of Arsenal Football Club, because every staff member, every fan has got a huge part to play in this.
Mm. Yeah, in football, Bill Shankly used to call it the Holy Trinity, where the manager, players and fans all aligned.
Yeah.
Here we can obviously see that the players and the manager are aligned, but there's a section of Arsenal fans that say, Edu and Arteta, this is Arteta's first managerial gig.
Yeah.
How can we pin all of our hopes that this is a man to, you know, transform our fortunes, lead us into the Champions League, yeah, challenge for Premier Leagues? What would you sort of say to those sort of fans that are very skeptical about what Arteta can do with Arsenal?
Yeah, and, you know, when you look at this from this side, where you think first managerial job, Arsenal Football Club, where you hope you have people who have got absolute experience, you know how to deal with, you know, these adverse moments, how to deal with successful moments like winning the FA Cup, you know, what do we need to do the next season not to get deluded by that result? I think, and that's sometimes difficult to explain, but what Mikel gives you obviously is a hell of a lot of experience as an assistant coach, you know, under Pep Guardiola. And he wanted to make that next step. And obviously people, hierarchies, trusted him. he presented himself as someone who wants to lead us into this, into these difficult moments. So I could only agree, but if I would know, you know, how he reacts to difficult moments and how he wants to learn from these moments, he needs to learn fairly quickly, you know, let's be honest, you know, he needs to learn super, super quick, because in football and being a manager of Arsenal Football Club, there are many, many moments. If you lose three games on the spin, you are in trouble. Let's be real about it. You cannot have more than one or two moments, you know, of this. You know, that's the reality of the game and the football club. However, if I understand someone who learns and wants to learn super quick, you know, from things that happen, and surrounds himself with the people who have got the experience, you know, in the game of football, than it's himself and his coaching staff. So, yeah, I would speak to people and get behind, you know, get behind the idea, that the vision that was outlined fairly, fairly clearly, and just build on that.
You know, we've been speaking a little bit about the models deployed at different clubs and the structures of clubs and whatnot.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask you, Per, is about succession planning at the club.
Yeah.
And we'll use an example of a club that we mentioned in passing recently, which was Leicester. And the fact that, of course, they've got Jamie Vardy up front, but they seem to have navigated succession planning quite well in bringing in this window, Patson, Daka. Of course, they've got Kelechi Iheanacho at the club.
Yeah.
How involved are you with the strategy when it comes to succession planning? Yeah. Right. And again, a prime example is, right, let's you know, keep it real. Aubameyang is now 32. We have Lacazette, who's 30. So they're now getting to the final stage or the latter stages of their careers.
Yeah.
What part do you play in navigating succession planning in terms of now bringing through players through the youth team and those conversations with Edu and Arteta?
Yeah, we have actually a template that describes the whole succession planning within the club, from first team over to transition loan players, to 23s, to 18s, to actually 16s. You know, from scholarship up, we have a scale of players that we have through with gradings from ourselves, how we see them. So I think the first thing Edu does is, if he has a vacancy, he looks to the academy, he looks down the list. So in terms of strikers, yeah, obviously you have Aubameyang, Balogun, Nketiah. Then we have players on loan, Müller. We have Tyrese John-Jules. We have Keon Edwards. We have Billy Weiger. We have Amani Richards. We have Khalil Green. So you have all the latter from first team to 18s, basically now. I just set them where we have a template and where we work on. So I just worked this morning on succession planning, you know, updating succession planning, that Edu has the best possible information in terms of when there's a vacancy up there, what do we have from behind? What do we have in the academy? What do we have on loan? So we want to keep it as balanced as possible, that we're in a good position to whatever we need within the first team, that we can, you know, that I am in a position where he doesn't need to look out to the market, you know, where we have seen a player building up, you know, towards this moment when Pierre-Emerick goes out at some stage, that we have an option available. And then obviously it is about the decision. If it's the academy option, do we have other options? Do we have the money? I mean, we are succession planning is probably something that, I'm obviously heavily involved because I need to give input. Yeah. If I don't give the input, then people don't have the knowledge. So I need to constantly be someone who gives input.
And how do you know when a player is ready for the first team?
Yeah. You know, the good thing about, you know, the model is now that we're not going to just rely on our 23s games and scoring 20, 25 goals, you know. The transition from, you know, academy to adult football is a big, there's a big gap actually, you know, that we have to fulfill. So we're looking at the 23s league as maximum, depends if available, one season. That is it, you know. And then there is now where we kind of explore the loan market more and more, where we need to expose players to 25 to 50 games minimum, you know. And then you see role models like Chelsea, then you see Reece James, then you see Mason Mount that played 50 plus games, Tammy Abraham, and they look just different, you know. When the pressure moments at the Emirates kicks in, you know, you don't recognize yourself anymore, because these are the moments when, yeah, when you want to look comfortable, but all of a sudden the ball is jumping away. It is that burden. We need to take that away as much as we can. But if we just think that 30 games in the 23s league will prepare him for that moment, that's not right. You know, we need to make sure that they have men's games in their legs to basically, you know, are not overwhelmed by these moments, you know, where the tempo's up, the heat is on, the pressure is straight away there, and they want to make a straight impact, and all of a sudden the ball bounces different. I can tell you, the ball bounces different at training, or it bounces totally different. Yeah. You get on with that quickly and learn from it. So yeah, transition, loan market will be huge for us to prepare our players better for first team moments. And on that, when they create their own pathway through the 23s to the loan market, you know, they can go step by step really into to reach that Premier League level, because ultimately, yeah, I need it until 26, 27, you know, as a center half. You know, some center halves, they need to probably go through the leagues, League Two, League One, Championship, and be in a position, build themselves up, their profile, to be in a position to be regarded as one of a future Arsenal player. So it's a huge task.
Very insightful. Well said. I wanted to ask you about your time as obviously assistant coach to Freddie Ljungberg in 2019, where obviously Arsenal are probably on the back of a low ebb in terms of the atmosphere in and around the club. Obviously, Unai Emery was sacked. There was a lot of stories that came out about things that were happening in the dressing room. And obviously, you're still there at the club. So how would you sort of compare that sort of environment to what we're seeing with Arsenal now?
Yeah, totally different. I mean, I was overwhelmed, you know, by the fact all of a sudden being back, you know, on the sidelines. And I just wanted to support Freddie. He wanted me to support him, you know, just be someone around the players, around the staff. I mean, we did the job of, I think, 5 or 6 people, basically, you know, for 3 weeks. And you could see that it was a little bit too much. And I'm really grateful for that experience and for the trust that Freddie had in me, or the club had in me, basically, to kind of get through these tough moments. I've tried to just be myself, be really calm, you know, being exposed into that situation and be myself, be a leader. You know, when change happens, you got to stay composed and be someone who just stands there, be present. That's what I wanted to do, what I wanted to provide. I had some responsibilities in terms of set pieces that helped me as well to develop myself and my game and what I want to achieve, you know, in my career. That was really insightful, but I would say that was pretty hectic, you know. That was
something that makes you want to go into coaching more, or
no, less. less actually. I wasn't ready. I've tried to be reminded, you know, how it was as a player. But obviously, to be there, to see it, it was a pretty hectic environment. And obviously, the expectation, who is next? And obviously, Freddie being in the mix. So, no, that is totally different now. And I would argue that there is, you know, a level of consistency now. And if we believe in that consistency, then we are in a much better position.
I think final one from myself. And, you know, there was a decision earlier on in the year, which I call a footballing catastrophe, where the big four clubs in England decided to join the European Super League. And I know you're a footballing man. That wouldn't have sat well with you, because I know you, you're a man of morals and a man of leadership, and you're all about the fans. So what did you think of that decision when the clubs, you know, decided to join it?
Yeah, that was a very quick turnaround, actually. I think it was announced on a Sunday and I think we went out of it on a Tuesday. If I collect this correctly, it was a quick turnaround, and I was just happy that people just admitted, okay, this was a mistake, and let's go out again. I think that's how I want to leave it, because I didn't feel it. You know, as some things happens and you don't feel it, you know, I didn't feel it. And I think it's something that we as a club wanted to correct pretty quickly, because we, again, underestimated something which we cannot underestimate, you know, that is the beauty of the game and the fans and what it means. So you don't underestimate that fact. So I'm pretty happy that it was gone fairly quickly. And yeah, the whole scenario, I couldn't get my head around it and I didn't feel it.
Yeah, in terms of Arsenal, for me, they've always been a sort of club of tradition. And, you know, over the past year or so, we've seen key figures in the club like Francis Kagigal, who came onto the platform, you know, a key man in scouting players. We see him leave. We also saw Steve Bold leave the football club as well. And, you know, ex-players like Jack Wilshere came out and sort of called the decision a joke. Do you think Arsenal still have that identity that endeared them to the world? Or do you believe they've just become another football club, a commercial entity?
No, you have to work on that identity every single day. You know, that's what my job is, you know. I'm not someone that, you know, we need to learn, obviously, from history and from the tradition, and what that has done to the club is magnificent. But I want to move forward as well, you know, and want to work on that identity to keep repeating what I do and what I say every single day. And that's why things happen sometimes. New leaders come in, decisions are made for some or the other reason, you know, that's what happens. And ultimately in the world, everyone has got an opinion and is free to say it. But the leaders that drive the change, obviously, you know, they need to stick with it and stand by the changes that they make. So yeah, I'm probably guilty of that. But what I can say is that, you know, I want to own, you know, the identity in Arsenal driving forward. That is what I want. And that's how I base my decisions on. So yeah. And we cannot always comment on every single social media comment, yeah, you know, I would say. Yeah. And that's why, you know, I work to the best of my ability for Arsenal Football Club almost 24/7, I would say, to make sure that, you know, we can create something here that, you know, that people will remember. But just living off that, you know, of that past and that transition is not good enough, in my opinion.
Mm. 100%. Now, of course, Per, we're going to, you know, wrap it up very, very shortly. But in this time that we've spoken to you, we've spoken to Per, the football player, Per, the academy manager. What we want to do is finally speak to Per, the husband and father. So what are your interests away from the game when you're not crunching numbers and holding training sessions and, you know, having meetings? What do you enjoy doing in your spare time?
Yeah, I've got a lovely family. I've got three boys, actually, 10, 7 and 1. So you can almost say that they need me, you know, they need me every single day. And when I get home, and sometimes I get home very, very late and I don't see them, they recognize that, yeah, daddy works hard. Yeah, daddy works hard with a purpose. So, I want to be a role model in that sense. But obviously, I want to take care of their development and I'm needed there as well. So my wife does a hell of a job, you know, with the three boys. And when I'm not at Arsenal, I love a bit of basketball sometimes.
You put the height for it.
I would probably be a point guard probably. You know? Only a point guard, you know, in the game of basketball. I love to watch that. LeBron James is a key figure that does everything he can, you know, to sustain a phenomenal career. That is a role model that I look up to. And then pretty much family life every single day and trying to be best possible person, you know, in that environment.
Yeah. 100%. Can't say it any better, man. Yeah. That is the perfect way to close this session. Per, it's been an absolute pleasure.
I'm sure, you know, you guys will agree that it's been really, really good and really insightful,
thank
man.
You for, yeah, thank think, you for being so open.
Honestly, yeah. We really do appreciate it.
We expect nothing less from the BFG.
And I know certainly that a lot of Arsenal fans in particular, I mean, general football fans, but Arsenal fans will really appreciate the insight and, you know, the detail that you were willing to go into for us, you know. We thank you very, very much, Per.
Thank you.
So we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much to all of you guys that have tuned in up until this point. Before we sign off, just a reminder, if you're not yet following us on Twitter, it's at @podcast_TBG and on Instagram at @pod_TBG. And you can watch all of our interviews and podcasts on YouTube as well. If you're not yet subscribed, please hit that subscribe button. Just look below now. It's just beneath this video. Yep, there, you found it. Hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, and make sure you're staying tuned for all of the new content that we've got coming. Stay tuned, guys. Big things to come. Have I forgotten anything else, Doc?
All covered
everything? All right. Until the next episode, guys, over and out.
Peace.
Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet. But if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know. It's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data, Q3 2022, and Cox serviceable areas, visit cox.com/internet for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.